York Talks with George Lane.
Good evening, it's 6pm and you are listening to the first edition of York Talks for this year. I'm George Lane and for the next hour we'll be discussing and debating all the big campus stories of the week. Got our news and sports team in the studio along with guest panellist Vanbrugh Chair Michael Duncan, two politics department course reps, student newspaper representatives, and we've got some opinions from USU President Sam Maguire and College Sports Officer Dave Washington. Over the next hour, York will talk on this special edition of York Talks on University Radio York.
Tune in and hear York Talks on UOY.
So, coming up on tonight's show, do you have an opinion on lad culture at York? University of York Students Union President Sam Maguire is leading a campaign to make a York a zero-tolerance university. How far should student clubs be reined in by this campaign? And are there aspects of this culture which could be seen as sexual harassment and as a criminal offence? Also, organisers of World Mental Health Day have criticised Noosa's journalistic integrity when an article published about the event was supposedly an unbalanced, under-researched article. How far should student papers be allowed to publish what they like without having its credibility or accuracy checked externally? We'll have a former news sports editor and a former College Ents vice chair to discuss this issue. Plus, Vanbrugh College are debating whether the provision of free college sport should stay. With nearly 25% of their budget spent on sport, could it be better spent on welfare or events? We speak to Chair Michael Duncan and the College Sports Officer Dave Washington to discuss these different sides of this upcoming referendum. All that and a lot more to come on the programme. Remember, you can tweet us your opinions at UOY News. We'll be using the hashtag York Talks. Or you could alternatively text us 07851 101 313. But first, we're going to go to some live news bulletins with Kat Suave.
Live from the URY newsroom at 6.02. Several shots have been fired inside and outside the nation's parliament in Ottawa, leaving one soldier dead. A gunman fired at the National War Memorial in Canada and then ran into parliament nearby, continuing the attack. The incident came hours after Canada raised its terror threat level following a fatal hit-and-run attack on two soldiers earlier in the week. Former BBC Radio 1 DJ Mike Reed has requested a song he wrote in support of UKIP be withdrawn from sale following complaints that it was racist. UKIP Calypso, performed with a mock Caribbean accent, sings the praises of party leader Nigel Farage. "I'm so sorry that the song unintentionally caused offence. It was never meant to, and I apologise unreservedly," Reed said. "I've told the record company to withdraw the single immediately." Pop group S Club 7 are to reunite for the first time in more than a decade for Children in Need next month. The group recorded the charity's official single in 2000, Never Had a Dream Come True, which reached number one. The group is set to perform a medley of their greatest hits on the BBC Appeal Show on the 14th of November. In sports news, BBC Sports Personality of the Year 2014 has had its panel announced. Olympians Rebecca Adlington and Delise Lewis will join Paralympic star Tanny Gray-Thompson and former footballer Jason Roberts on the BBC Sports Personality of the Year panel. The panel, which will consist of 12 people in total, will decide the top 10 contenders for the main award, as well as the Team of the Year, Coach of the Year and Overseas Sports Personality. Now a look at the weather. This evening and tonight will be a mild night, with spells of rain becoming lighter and more intermittent into the early hours as winds also ease a little. Most of the rain will be on the western slopes of the Pennines and North Yorkshire Moors. Highs of 11 degrees. That's the latest. More news coming up on the hour.
On air. Online.
York Uni's student radio station.
Radio news by students, for students. The URY News Hour on University Radio York.
Good evening. It's coming up to 4 minutes past six. You're listening to York Talks. Now, sport. Should it be free for colleges? With the increased fees at both the sports centre and the village, students are relying on free sport provision to help with their budgets. With USU's Getting to Sport and only one college giving free sport, should more colleges adopt the same policy, or should Vanbrugh ditch its free sport? Now, over £4,000 a year, or 25% of its budget, is spent on sport, and there's now a referendum on whether it should stay. Now, I'm pleased to say, joining me in the studio with Michael and Alex from Vanbrugh College, if you want to introduce who you are and where you come from.
Yep, I'm Michael Duncan, I'm the chair of Vanbrugh JCLC.
I'm Alex Miller, the Vanbrugh sports rep.
And also in the studio is, of course, Kat Suave, who will be joining with his discussion. To begin with, to kind of set a bit of context, when I spoke to Dave Washington earlier, I asked him if all colleges had a bigger budget, would he like to see sport free for everyone? And if if not, maybe the reason could be potentially that maybe a small contribution from everyone could be a way forward, regardless of what the budget is. But here's his response.
The more opportunities that we can provide for students to engage in sports at any level, and especially if it's free, is brilliant. What Farmers do is a fantastic scheme. It just comes down to the factors to whether it is financially viable.
So he's saying at the moment it would be fantastic if he could, but is it financially viable for all colleges? Maybe not. What do you think about Vanbrugh? Is it financially viable?
I think it is, yeah. I mean, the point of this referendum is we're about trying to give people an opportunity to express their views. Clearly, being such a big section of the college budget, it's an important issue for people to discuss. But I think if people are in any doubt whether it's financially viable, it is. We're slowly bringing ourselves out of debt. The historic debt that's been widely reported on, so that's not news. But we bring ourselves out of debt, and we've done that at the same time as maintaining things like free sports. So on that question, it is financially viable for us.
And Alex, are you of opinion, even if you had millions of pounds in your budget and you wanted to make sport free, that is the way forward, as opposed to asking for a small contribution regardless? Is it the best way to do it, by giving free sport rather than asking for a contribution?
I think so. At this grassroots level, i.e. not elite sport, not training three or four times a week, I think sport should be free. At school, you never had to put in money for paying for things like that. The school provided that. Obviously, they get a much bigger budget from the government. I think sport at this level should be free.
Okay, moving on to another sort of point which I talked to Dave about. I was asking about the other colleges. They have students who pay for sport. Mm. They might pay a sort of an AU fee at the start of a term. They might pay per session. And also he was talking about the Get Into Sport scheme. That's, for people who aren't aware of it, it's a sport where you pay a set amount of money. You get a couple of sessions. I think he said £5 for six sessions for any sport. And that's a way some people to do. But that is ultimately a cost. Regardless of whether it's a small amount, it is still a cost. And I asked him how other colleges manage to get sport so sort of prioritised and so sort of successful with still having these costs.
Recently, we've introduced the Get Into Sport programme. So that runs through up to, I think, about 20 different sports now this year. And that offers the opportunity for students to go along to sessions, try them out, and they tend to be £5 for six sessions over the course of the term. So you don't have any of the commitments of a high membership, have to be there week in, week out. It's low commitment, low cost, but great opportunity to try a new sport or carry on something you've done before and improve on it.
No, I think that scheme's fantastic for people who want to get involved in sport. But what's even more fantastic is obviously Vanbrugh at the moment having free sport completely. How do you think other colleges manage to get such high levels of participation with these costs already on them?
I think a lot of it comes down to tradition. Vanbrugh has always been billed as the music college. You play an instrument, you go to Vanbrugh, which is good because our music facilities and our participation in music is second to none. But when James and Derwin are billing themselves as sports colleges, they're going to attract sportsmen and sportswomen. And not to stereotype, but a lot of people who are very into playing instruments and singing and stuff aren't always into sport as well. So that's why I think Vanbrugh maybe doesn't have naturally high sporting participation rates, but I know other colleges like Langwith and Goodrick struggle like Vanbrugh.
I think the other point to mention is that sport training, while, you know, it's obviously the benefit is that people get to go along and do exercise for free, it's which is great. There's also all the stuff outside that, you know, there's always talk about college spirit and what that is and what that actually, how do you get this famous college spirit. I think one of the ways is you have people who go along and they train together and they go on social together and they form part of a wider community. And I think free sport is maybe not the only way to do that, but it certainly has worked for us so far, I think.
And Kat, you're not actually in Vanbrugh College, so
no.
You could give the outside perspective. What was your opinion on college sport? Who are you with? James?
Derwent.
Oh,
a staunch Derwenter, I hasten to add. No, I think, you know, Derwent do brand themselves as the sporty college. And I think regardless of whether you have to pay or not, that Derwenters will go in for sport. The majority of Derwenters do go in for sport. So I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, it would be great, like Vanbrugh, to have free sport, but because the majority of the college do it, I'm not sure that Derwent can afford to do it.
Now, that's something that Dave did pick up on. So I'll hear what Dave had to say about other sports and other sort of college spirit.
The highest proportion of university sportsmen are at James and Halifax, I think it would be fair to say. And then secondly, in terms of ethos, I think that shows very much why Derwent are so successful. They have such a strong spirit. Everyone gets involved in the college sport. It's part of the culture of Derwent College to get involved with the social side of it as well as the sporting side of it.
So I can see from your argument what you're suggesting, having free college sport at Bamborough is a way of kind of bringing in this idea that sport is about Bamborough as well. It's not just about music, it's trying to build up its reputation. What do you think it would have a big effect if this free sport was removed then for Bamborough? What would it entail, do you think?
I think sports such as rugby, football, netball, hockey would survive absolutely fine, but it's a smaller sports, basketball, pool, squash, tennis, badminton, the sort of not traditionally large team sports would suffer a lot, and they'd have to start paying a lot individually to book the sessions.
I think this is one of the things where free sport really pays dividends. It's about the smaller sports, but it's also about the people who can come along and participate and do stuff and don't have to be, as you said at the beginning, George, people who are paying £9,000 fees and ever higher accommodation prices don't have to come along and don't have to be committed because they've paid a £60 membership. And I think that's something that's really valuable for us, not just as a college, but for the people we represent as well.
So if you were, well, you are a college student and you've got until Friday to take part in this referendum, what do you think would, let's flip it around the other side. Obviously, Michael, you have a chair, you can see both sides of the argument. Mm. What would be the incentive to not have college sport? It's a fantastic thing we've established, Alex has been saying, to have free college sport, but what would be the difference? What do other colleges get which isn't free sport, which Bamborough doesn't? And what?
Well, there's a few things. I mean, it's, as you said, it being hugely expensive, it would be a big block of money that would be freed up if that suddenly decide not to do free sport anymore. So one of the other things that a lot of colleges do, they do big free summer events, so things like Goodfest and Langwith Summer Day last year, which Bamborough doesn't currently do because we don't have the money to spend on that, and that's something potentially to be able to look into. Again, they are both in a similar way to college sport, they're community building events, they're about college spirit, and it's, I suppose, the question for people to ask themselves when they're voting, and this is what I think the best way is to try and get that college spirit to develop.
Well, fantastic. Voters have until Friday to cast their vote. They can go to usu.org/vote. Obviously, you do have to be in Bamborough College, so you're listening. You cannot, unfortunately, vote for your college to give you free sport. That's something you'll have to negotiate with your own JCRCs. But thank you very much, Alex and Michael, for joining us on Your
Thanks,
Talks.
Sure, thank you.
And good luck with the campaign.
Thank you.
Okay, so lad culture is a concept often debated and in university life. In the past few weeks, USU President Sam Maguire has initiated a campaign to stamp out lad culture and the negative press it garners, and how it chiefly associated with sports societies and their socials. News editor Kat Suave has been asking the students of York their opinions on this issue about lad culture epidemic, and asked members of sports teams about their experiences of this phenomenon. We hear from Kat now.
USU are launching a campaign to tackle lad culture at the university, including an evaluation of its harassment policy. This news comes after a recent news survey found 76% of respondents thought that lad culture exists at the University of York, while 60% thought the university could do more to tackle the problem. The survey also found that 70% of female respondents experienced unwelcome sexual advances and that 69% had had overtly sexual comments directed at them. I spoke to some York students about their opinions on lad culture at the university and what they think can be done to tackle the issue. So, are you aware of the lad culture problem at York?
Insofar as there's a lad culture problem everywhere, yes.
So you don't think that it's predominantly at York?
No, I don't think it's predominant at York. I think if you were to go to any university in the country, you would see the same sort of problems to which lad culture is attributed, such as excess drinking, not very responsible behaviour. Yes, I think that's the case in most universities up and down the country.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think that York was as bad as some places. Obviously, there's been lots in the news about some pretty atrocious bits of lad culture. I think it's obviously just an issue everywhere, really, with sort of people our age, and the university environment is sort of ingrained.
Okay, and have you yourself sort of seen or experienced any negative effects of lad culture?
I myself haven't. I'm sure, actually, if you were to go out, particularly on the same nights as sports socials, it would be quite evident that there was at least that kind of culture and atmosphere around the place. Yeah.
I don't think I've necessarily had a first-hand experience, but I've sort of known of friends that have, you know, this, again, normally the sort of sporty clubs when they all go for the nights out, and there's that sort of culture that, you know, like the rugby lads or the football lads or whatever have to go out and get really drunk and get with people.
from the people that I've interviewed, it's all sports people that perpetuate this lad culture. So what do you think they can do to sort of rebrand themselves?
Yeah, I think it's just sort of just having a new attitude and a new way of doing socials and things, that the focus doesn't have to be on getting smashed and going out and doing whatever and treating people badly. Like, the focus can just be on the team and getting to know your teammates.
The results of the new survey suggested several students thought lad culture mainly exists within sports societies, with one respondent saying that the rugby teams are notorious for it. I spoke to members of both the Ultimate Frisbee team and the American football team to understand what lad culture meant in their sports and whether it was fair to brandish all sports societies with this negative stamp.
I think your Ultimate Frisbee in general is actually quite unique in the sports, in the sense that there is a mixed team. We do play and train for tournaments involving both male and female, and that is actually almost integral to the sport itself.
And do you think then that there is a problem at the University of York in general with lad culture in sport?
From what I've been exposed to, no, not really.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I have not got experience playing in rugby, hockey, football.
Do you think that lad culture sort of outside of sport at York is a problem?
No. But again, like I said, I don't think I'm very exposed to it. Maybe I've not seen much of it, put it that way.
Do you think that there is a problem with lad culture in your team?
No, I don't. It may be perceived as it by other people when we do stuff like we go out on socials. That's when people may think lad culture is bad, but it's really necessary for like American football, our team, and other, especially contact sport teams. I think it's really necessary because it's physical, and you need to have it to start up in a game. You need to have that kind of bond between players. When we play the sport, and when we drink, it bonds us, it unites us, it creates the team that will enable us to win. And then when the effects of things like the drinking and when we go out, it can get out of hand.
So you think that by eliminating that culture, you would lose something?
You take part of the game, you take part of the bond between the players.
The interviewees had differing opinions of the necessity of lad culture in sport. Is it a case of male chauvinism, or does eliminating lad culture take away the true essence of a team?
Tune in and hear York Talks on UOY. You are listening to York Talks. It's coming up to 18 minutes past 6. We've had a discussion already about Vanbrugh Free Sports, and now we're on lad culture. And whilst we were listening to that package, we're in the studio joined with Josh and Peter and Kat from the news and sport team. And we were talking about what exactly is lad culture. We spoke to Sam Maguire, we're going to hear from him in a moment, about what he thinks lad culture is. We've heard from the team just now about what they think lad culture is. And it's a very mixed message. What is it? Is it sexual harassment? Is it just a bit of initiation? Is it... I think what this campaign needs is a bit more clarity as to what extent lad culture will be applied and what these different punishments are. What do you think, Kat, initially?
Well, to me, lad culture screams of, you know, boys getting drunk and then getting a bit rowdy, being sort of sexually aggressive, that sort of thing. But yeah, I think it does need clarity because, as you were saying when we were just talking before, it's not illegal to get drunk, but, you know, it's the implications of what that might lead to.
Okay, and I think what we'll do to begin with, we'll hear what Sam Maguire, the leader of this USU campaign at Wanting Zero Tolerance, what he thinks lad culture is and how he wants to stop it.
One, we want to run a kind of a real large-scale awareness campaign involving as many students, opening up the kind of discussions about the culture, kind of giving people the opportunity to say what they think about it, to say that basically they are not okay with it, because it's become a very normalised thing within kind of society. And then there's also kind of practical things we're doing where we want to implement a zero-tolerance policy across all our club nights, across all campus bars. We want to work with the university on how they communicate the harassment policy. Kind of one of the things that's been shown to stem from lad culture is increased sexual harassment, and people have said they don't know how to report report sexual harassment on, so a lot of people don't understand what it is, and definitely not what the effect it has when it happens. So what we need to work on is how the harassment policy at the university is communicated to students, because many of them have said, I didn't know there was one, I didn't know how to report it, and we need to make that as easy as possible for students. And then we're working on various other things, working with kind of sports teams on doing like workshops about kind of the effect that kind of bad behaviour has, because our sports teams are absolutely amazing, they do such incredible work, but occasionally it has been shown that the kind of behaviour among sports teams is quite intimidating, so we need to kind of work with all of the teams to kind of make sure that isn't a thing here at York.
Now, I'm not sure if it's just me being not in a sports team, but I still don't understand what lad culture is. Peter, have you got any idea from what Sam Maguire said? What are we trying to stamp out? What is this campaign trying to remove?
Well, clearly Sam Maguire's main target here is sexual harassment, but I think you can't target sexual harassment. I think there's a definite link between sexual harassment and what Kat mentioned earlier, the getting rowdy, getting drunk, these sort of initiation ceremonies. And I think it's all linked. Impossibly, there's not quite enough sort of respect for anyone in these sort of sports environments, and that team bonding is always taken too far at the expense of others.
Yeah, I suppose it's a case of how close do you want to get with your bonding exercises. But I do agree with sort of the label of lad culture, similar to as Kat was saying, it's when excessive amounts of alcohol get drunk, and it's then the negative behaviours and negative pressures come from that, either forcing members of your team to get involved with things that are not very good. Or,
well, it's all about sort of scoring points, isn't it? Lad points, I think, is the term. You know, that everyone's trying to outdo each other. So I think that can just harvest a really dangerous environment, especially in a sports team when everything's supposed to be so jovial. So.
And when everyone in there is very competitive anyway, it's then trying to outdo them. And it's, yeah, like I was saying, that those negative pressures. But then obviously any sort of sexual harassment from that is obviously unacceptable.
So I asked Dave Washington, the college sports officer, to what extent he thought lad culture existed in York compared to other universities. We go around, we visit lots of the universities, lots more or worse, and this is what he had to say.
I think, first of all, the important thing to say is that, yes, lad culture does exist. However, we're very fortunate here in York. York is renowned as a very safe place, and I think in comparison to other institutions, lad culture is a small problem in comparison to the large problems this is at other institutions when you hear some of the horrible stories that go on at a number of other universities in terms of initiations and different social events that they have going on across the calendar year.
Kat, have you had any experience of when you've seen other sports clubs down, or when you've had other friends at universities, is York really that bad, or is it really? Or?
Not at all. No. Not at all. I've heard some absolute horror stories from my friends at different college, at different universities throughout the country. And in comparison, I don't think York has that much of a problem with lad culture. I certainly haven't come into contact with it. Maybe that's because I don't do much sport. But the people I was talking to when I was interviewing them have said, even when they're on sports teams, they're not really in contact with that sort of behaviour. So
Sam Maguire argued a little bit different, but also a little bit the same.
I know, for example, none of our sports teams would be kind of doing the same things, similar things to kind of that LIC rugby team would do. I think our students are more aware. However, at the same time, I do think there's kind of a more underlying effect of the culture here. I think it's maybe not as obvious, but it definitely is still here. And it is still something that is really, really important to tackle.
Now, zero tolerance is what is being campaigned for. It must be quite hard to achieve this. How would it impact clubs, especially with a lot of these clubs have years, sort of decades-old traditions. They do these things because it's been like that for many, many years. Do you think having a zero tolerance and outright ban will ever stop anything? If you say you're not allowed to be racist, you're not allowed to be sexist, it doesn't mean it's going to be removed from society. Do you think this zero tolerance will work?
I think if it's properly implemented, we'll see a possibly not immediate change, but certainly a slow change over the future. You know, traditions can be changed, but they take a long time.
That's a challenging one. as you say, a lot of clubs do have, it's part of their social calendar almost, their, however you want to describe it, they're not initiations anymore, or they're different social events that they have to welcome freshers or to across the course of the year. We'd have to work with clubs is the key. I don't think saying a strict enforcement of no, you can't do this is always going to receive a backlash from people. You have to work with people to help them to see sense of it, see why we are doing it. And the more people we can get involved from the major clubs who are most closely associated with our culture, the better.
So that's Dave Washington there. And so we've established with this brief discussion, the Lad Culture campaign's only just really starting and we're not 100% clear what it is. Sam Maguire has argued that a lot of the time sexual harassment needs to be identified, how you deal with it, and he does sometimes think it is a matter for police. So I think there's a distinguishing factor, so there's some extremes to the others. Some things are just outlandish sort of events that happen on a drunken night out, and other things are a little bit more serious. And this is what Sam Maguire just finished with.
A number of really different strands to it. So one, we want to run a kind of a real large scale awareness campaign involving as many students, opening up the kind of discussions about the culture.
I think I might have edited that wrongly. That is his full interview. I won't play you that. But what his point was basically was that it needs to have police involvement sometimes. When it's sexual harassment, get the police involved. York does not tolerate that. And I think that's what the zero tolerance is. But in terms of anything else, Lad Culture with other sort of societies and other sort of things, it's maybe not something that can be zero tolerance, and it's something clubs just need to negotiate within the colleges, within the clubs, how they can best do it. And Kat, I think we've got some tweets.
Yes, Ben Basin, former head of URI News, has said there's a danger of confusing lad culture with just guys getting drunk and being rowdy. There's definitely more to it than that, which I completely agree with. You know, you've got to, boys are going to get rowdy when they're drunk no matter what. So I think you've got to distinguish between encouraging that behaviour and sort of disapproving.
Well, it's coming up to 6:27. We'll leave that debate there. I'm sure a lot more to come on that issue throughout the next term, with the campaign only just starting, and I'm sure we'll have a few more answers as to exactly what lad culture is. Now, a quick look at York Uni Swap Shop. We're going to have a quick package from Claire now. We're not going to have a discussion on this issue, but you might have noticed on Facebook over the last probably couple of years, but I've only noticed it the last 6 months or so, the impact of Swap Shop. Now, for those of you who don't know, you can put items of clothes, you can put books, textbooks, you can even put old bikes or pens if you wanted to on this debating sort of online marketplace. That's what it is. And Claire's been investigating into exactly what this phenomenon is and how York students are getting involved with it.
Hey, Macklemore, can we go thrift shopping?
What? What?
With just under 6,000 members and several new posts every hour, York Swap Shop is definitely the leading trading venue for York Uni students. York Vision have just looked into the site under the title Swap Shop of Horrors, but it's far from horrific and sees pupils trading textbooks, unwanted clothing, furniture, and actually almost anything you could imagine. It's just like York's very own Portobello Road. Vitamins, severed heads, iron brew, and willow t-shirts are all objects picked up upon by Vision, and I'm sure choosing a top five odd posts was a real challenge, especially given Swap Shop status as a popular destination for students looking to freight or impersonate their friends. I'm guilty of this myself and have also been the victim of having my possessions posted as for sale when they were still very much wanted, but do also appreciate the hugely useful nature of a Facebook site on which you can buy last minute train tickets, secondhand books and other items at a fraction of their new selling price. To get a better look of how students perceive Swap Shop, I spoke to some on campus and heard their thoughts.
I think Swap Shop's really good for people who need to sell books. It's a useful thing on Facebook for people to use, but there are some stupid comments on there and selling things that aren't real, so it's good for some people but not for everyone.
Recently sold my LFA level 2 French book on it.
And how did you find that experience as a seller?
It was really good. I didn't actually post on it, I just saw someone advertising for it, so I didn't really have to do anything except meet up with her.
So would you advise freshers to get involved and start using Swap Shop?
Yes, I definitely would.
Yes, I am actually. I joined it in second year and I'm very intrigued as to what it held.
And what do you think, is there a good range of products? Is it quite an interesting website?
I mean, I think it's
it's mainly bikes and old shelves. But I mean, I found a very nice top on there actually. It was a nice kind of crocheted coral colour. And I met up with the girl because it was the perfect size for me. And the photo actually was very misleading. And it was a neon orange long top, probably down to my thighs. And it was a completely different size to what she said. So I found it quite misleading actually.
It's quite a deceptive website then.
I'd say so. I'd say maybe look out for the photos, ask for maybe more than four photos, and if it's an item of clothing, maybe ask for a photo of it on the person wearing it, as opposed to on a hanger.
I bought a top off there once, although it was from a friend who posted it, so it's probably not as revolutionary as a lot of the other exchanges.
I love scrolling through all the little things that people have for sale. There's loads of little interesting things that you never think you'd actually need, but then when someone else is selling it, you're like, oh, I could do with a hairbrush that's circular and also curls my hair. I have curly hair, but I would need that.
Fantastic. And have you ever used it as a service?
Yeah, I sold some shoes that were very painful for me to wear, but someone else bought them and they really enjoyed them, and I actually saw them around campus wearing them, sort of said hi and things like that. So it's also a way of making friends.
On air. Online. On demand.
York Uni's student radio station.
Radio news by students for students. The URY News Hour on University Radio York.
So still to come on tonight's show, it's coming up to 6:31 with a journalistic integrity of student newspapers questioned. We'll be talking to a former sports editor at News, Jamie Summers, and a former entertainment vice chair, and now a prominent figure in York, Chris Morris. Do you think papers can make outlandish statements with no facts, or do you think it's just a bit of fun when you see a far-fetched story reported? Also, course rep elections have closed today at lunchtime. Did you vote? We'll be talking to representatives from the politics department to discuss what the job entails and how far students really have a say on academic issues within their departments. Plus, have you used York Uni Swap Shop? We've just had it, and as a package, we'll be hearing a little bit more from Claire Thomas, and we'll be having a debate. So do send us your messages. How far have you used the Swap Shop? But we're going to move on to this next story, which is course reps.
On air, online, on demand.
York Uni's student radio station.
Radio news by students for students. The URY News Hour on University Radio York.
Now, it's a pleasure to say I'm joined in the studio with two politics course reps. One of them is the department rep as well. I'm joined with Julia and Chris.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we doing? I've also got Peter in the studio representing the news and sport team. We're going to have a little bit of discussion now about course reps. And to begin with, we need a bit of a description, what a course rep does. And Julia, I think as a department rep, you're the best person to describe, not just in the politics department, but across everywhere. What is a course rep?
So the course rep fundamentally represents the course that you're in. So politics, like Chris, politics with IR, like myself, or politics and history, like George. We attend loads of meetings with our department, and we really discuss if there's any issues or problems within the department, and we try to solve those issues. And we also try to bring in new ideas. So it's all about improving the department from the students first.
Now, voting has closed.
Yeah.
It closed at lunchtime today, I think.
Yes.
So it's too late now. If you're listening at home and you've not voted for your course rep elections, it's too late. You'll have to wait till next year. Do you think, Chris, many people were engaged with this process? From you were talking, obviously, you were campaigning for re-election. How much do you think people engage themselves with this compared with, say, the USU elections in the next term?
I think, personally, that there's far less engagement in these. I think this is possibly one of the worst set of engagements I've seen as well. I think the fact that on UC's website, it wasn't very easy to find where to vote. Previous course reps had to go on Facebook and post a link. I think that harmed things. In politics, we only had one email about it from the department as well, which I don't think particularly helped, one or two perhaps. Yeah. And so I think engagement as a result of that has been down, even though we've all tried to campaign for election, of course.
I think the positive thing, though, is that from the year that we started. I've seen more and more students wanting to get involved. So last year, there were about 5 or 6 students going for one position, whereas the year before, which was for the same position of representative for politics with IR, there was only me. So I think that's a positive aspect. It's become more popular.
Now, Peter, you are a first-year student. Have you had much engagement with course rep? Have you studied yourself, or do you even know anything about it?
I've heard briefly about it. I mean, what I was going to ask is, do you think it was offered up to students enough? You know, we were probably told about it once for 5 minutes. You know, I don't think we were told how to stand, you know, who we contacted to stand. Do you think it was offered enough to students?
No, definitely not. And I have to say that the first year that I became course rep, it was only by chance. I was on the USU website and found, you can put yourself up to be course rep. And I was like, why not? But it was by luck.
Yeah, I think certainly right. There's not enough attempts to explain what the role is as well. I think a lot of people come in first year, and if they have stood and did find out about it in time, they want different things and what the role can actually do. And it's not really involved in the sort of things there. Expecting.
Okay, so course reps, voting is closed, so there will be course reps coming into existence, new course reps or existing ones re-elected. Mm-hmm. Putting that aside, do you think now course reps have much influence? They sit on the board of studies, they often have sort of 5 or 6 representatives compared to departments with 30 members of staff. Mm-hmm. Do they have enough influence, and what sort of impact have you made over your time as a course rep?
I think they have an influence, at least in our department. I mean, I'm totally biased towards the politics department, obviously, because that's the department I'm coming from. But I do feel like the academics do listen to what we say. Maybe not all of them, but most of them. So, yeah, I do think so.
Yeah, I think Julia's right. And I think the politics department is particularly good at listening to what students want. They're quite keen to engage with students, but I have heard from other course reps who are friends of mine who say it's more about how do we best put across what policy we've already decided on to the students. So in other departments, it's not quite so such a useful role, really.
As a department rep, I was asked to do a student audit last year. So I think the department, at least ours, is willing to improve and listen to us for answers on how to improve.
I suppose now the question is a full year here to go as being a course rep, so you've got a lot of time to change. What measures do you think you guys would want to put in place, not only to increase this representation for course reps generally, but within your department? Have you got any radical ideas for how you could change or how the department could support you with that role?
I mean, a big issue last year was about cutting down the printing costs. And that's kind of a university issue. And in fact, when we were told by our board of studies that it wasn't going to happen for the politics department, the main reason was because it's more of a university issue. So I think as a department rep, the important thing that USU should be doing now is actually gathering all the department reps and kind of moving forward to achieve more.
I think Julia and I are forever rambling on about printing credits and meetings. It's also things like, in our course, certain modules that don't work very well. People haven't got access to books and things like that. That sort of basic bread and butter level issues is quite important for us as well. And also we've, particularly Julia, fought to make sure there's modules on our course that students want. I think the introduction of department reps last year by USU was a really good move to help to try and coordinate efforts for things like printing credits across different departments.
Well, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Julia and Chris, and obviously Peter as well in the studio. Thank you for that. If you've got any opinions on that, you can obviously message us or tweet us at UOI News. But next up, we're going to be talking about World Mental Health Day. Got a little bit of a transfer. We're going to have new guests come into the studio, and we will be moving across. We've got about 20 minutes left in this show. So remember, you can always give your opinions on Twitter.
Join the debate online.
Follow at UOI News and use the hashtag YorkSocks.
Okay, very exciting. We've already had one message in from Ben Basin. We're going to be hearing more from you guys throughout the show. You've got 22 minutes left to give your opinion, but it doesn't end there. You can always listen back via the UOY player. That's going to be going up in the next couple of hours, so you can listen back to us. And you can listen to our best bits on Mixcloud as well. UOY News has wonderfully got this Mixcloud, so you can hear the best bits, including some of these debates. Now, World Mental Health Day. it happened a couple of weeks ago, very successful event, and it raised obviously a lot of sort of ideas and awareness for the issue. But more recently, yesterday, Noose published an article that criticised or suggested mixed opinions of the success of the event, and that's student newspapers, they can report what they like. However, since then, some of the organisers have rejected the claims made in the article, and they've outlined that the article perhaps was unbalanced and didn't give the full picture. So not necessarily linking to the World Mental Health Day specifically, but this discussion will now be with Kat Suave, the news editor, and we've also got the former sports editor from Noose. We've got Jamie Summers in the studio. Hello, Jamie.
Hello, George.
And we've got Chris Morris, who was former vice chair for Vambra for entertainments, and he is now just a prominent figure in the events world at York. So we've got you in the studio.
Thank you. Hello, George. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And what I wanted to do is start with a bit of context of this. In the past, lots of student newspapers have faced criticism. USU has faced criticism for trying to intervene and, some argue, interfere with what articles should be published. But more recently, in the past couple of weeks, we've already started. Vision have had a bit of a scandal with their food bank story, people outlining that there's no evidence to back up the story. We've got this news article written yesterday, which basically spins it in a completely different direction to make a bit of controversy. To start with, how far do you think students should be regulated by USU, and do you think there should ever be an opportunity for stories to be censored, Chris?
I think it's a difficult one, because there's obviously two sides to the coin. On the one hand, you've got student reporters who, you know, pour their heart and soul into an article or a piece, and they have a story that they feel needs to be shared with the university community. On the other, they're a society that's part of the student union. If they publish something that's going to be, you know, compromising to the mission of the student union, or to students, or to the well-being or welfare, or anything that could be a bit dodgy, then they've, you know, the student union may have to censor it. It's a difficult one.
Now, Jamie, being a sports editor, you not only wrote articles yourself, but you, I presume you would have had to manage a team of reporters under you. How would you, working for Noose, how would you edit those articles? And although it was sporting related, I'm sure there were some articles which maybe had to have a little bit of editorial judgment to them.
Yeah, with regards to that, sport is a bit different in many ways to news, because the content of it tends to be inherently less dependent upon particular facts or evidence that you would perhaps need for a news article. If you get an article in that isn't publishable because it isn't factually correct, then the process would be to go back, check those facts. In sport, I work very closely with Cass Brown, the York Sport president, and Dave Washington, who is one of the two college sport officers, and they were the main source of verifying facts, as were people at York Sport, which I'm sure you're aware of who they are. But with regards to news, they go through a similar process of, they have their contacts. Reporters don't always have full access to those contacts, so it might be a two-way situation where a report comes in, it'll be a first draft, and that's not the one that's published. It is worked upon, and then eventually you get to a point where it is publishable, and that's what goes out.
Now, Kat, you're a news editor here at UOY. We obviously do our sort of journalism a little bit different. We tend to sort of argue that we're a little bit like the BBC, in the sense that we try to remain neutral, try not to lead with too many controversies. When you're editing and when you're listening to people's packages, do you have much of an impact in what is put out, or do you let reporters have free extent of their own journalistic license?
Well, if I'm interviewing someone and they have said, you know, after the interview or before the interview, hey, could you please make it sound like I'm not sort of a bad person? I had that actually quite recently with some comments that someone had said in an interview. And I try and sort of adhere to what the interviewee wants. But at the same time, I'm here to report an unbiased account of things. So, you know, I have to report what they actually say. That's my job.
Okay, and so you're talking about bias there. That's a point that is linking to this debate here. Sometimes articles are written and they seem to be very one-sided. Now, if you're writing a comment piece, we have them in Vision, we have them in News. If it's a one-sided debate, that's absolutely fine because that's the purpose of a comment piece. Mm. But when it's a news article, Jamie, to what extent do you believe News and Vision and other newspapers need to have a clearly balanced argument and not just a one-sided controversy headline hitting story?
It is important to be as impartial as possible. It isn't always possible to be completely impartial, especially if the reporter is in some way invested in the particular subject. I always wonder, I do question quite often, or at least I did, what the purpose of student media is. And I always think it should be to inform and to hold people to account. And to do that, you do need to be as impartial as possible, particularly with a news report. But that's why we also have, I know both papers have things like editorials that are deliberately anonymous, to allow for a degree of scope with opinion. But overall, I think it is very. You do need to remember at the same time, particularly with the newspapers, that to an extent they do have to write articles in a way that attract readership. If they don't, there's no point. So that's why you will often see a relatively sensationalist front page, because otherwise people don't pick it up, and that's not an ideal world to be in, but that's just the way it is, especially with, you know, you do need to attract things like advertising and funding, and the way to do that is to make sure that people read your paper.
Now, Chris, obviously you will know News and Vision, and also Lemon Press have recently been nominated to become the best publication of the year, so they must be doing something right. But do you think the use of anonymous quotes and sort of facts and figures which aren't necessarily verified or referenced, do you think that's good journalism, and do you think that should be improved upon?
I think journalism is 9 parts research to 1 part writing the thing in the end. If you're reporting on a story, comment piece, obviously you sit down and you write it. So I mean, it's quite easy in a university setting to compare it to the stuff that we do as part of our degrees. We write essays, we conduct projects, we conduct research. And we have to make sure that we get our facts right. We have to make sure that we reference things in the correct way. And I don't feel as though it should be any different in terms of, you know, in the field of journalism. It's the same thing. You've got to remember that there's much more on the line than people reading your stuff. You don't want to get, you know, to drag the publication's name through the mud, as it were. I mean, there was a couple of years ago, there was a major story that came out in News that had to be retracted in the end. There was a big situation with that. Things had to be edited, sponsors were pulling out of the newspaper, and all kinds of terrible things, all because the story had been written in the wrong way. And that's what I'm saying, you know, when I refer to a lot being on the line, that's what I'm referring to. There is a lot at stake. As a former editor of a smaller section of News a couple of years ago, being in that circle, you know, the majority of people that do it for the right reasons. They're very interested in it and they do everything right. Sometimes things slip through the net. Same with anything, really. But yeah, sorry, I've gone on a bit.
So would you think then is it just a blip? Obviously, it's happened before. It happens every so often. It depends on the journalist. They might just be thinking they're doing the right thing and making a really good article. Is it just a blip, or is there something drastically wrong with this structure of how articles are edited? Is it always going to happen, or is it just a one-off, Jamie?
No, I do think it's a case of things slipping through the net. We do, over the past few years, there's been a few incidents with, I won't name them, but both papers have had a couple of incidents where stories perhaps shouldn't have been written as they were. But I don't think there's an inherent problem. As you pointed out, 3 publications at York got through. Be shortlisted out of 5 across the country for a Guardian Award, so they're doing something right, but that's not to say that it's perfect. And to say structurally, you raise an important point that if the newspapers and URY and any campus media is there to hold people to account, and they are USU societies, you then have an issue whereby funding comes from USU. So if you're trying to hold to account the society or the union that funds you, there's an inevitable conflict of interest there, and that's an issue that's very difficult to get away from.
Now, we've had a message in via the website. It says, it's a difficult situation with student media because in the real world, newspapers are allowed to be partisan, even in news stories, whereas broadcasters can't by law. But because both York papers are owned by UCIB, they're required to be slightly more impartial because they're connected to the union. Facts, however, should be checked regardless. It's exactly what you were saying there, but the ending there, facts should be checked regardless, and I think that's a really strong point. Obviously, it was linked to the World Mental Health Day. The article was written about that. That's the most recent example of this. And we've actually got a message from one of the organisers who said, "We are pleased that we have helped open up a dialogue around the use and responsibility of student media, and we're grateful for all the support we've received in response to the news article. However, we now wish to draw a line under this. As a group, our main aim is to encourage open dialogues around mental health, and that is what we would like to focus our energy on from now on. We'll be releasing some details over the next few days of an open meeting, and be holding to response any criticism and also some information about how you can get involved." So World Mental Health Day have come back very good there in a sense. They've opened up a dialogue, but they want to draw a line under it, and I think that's a good thing, because their campaign is completely different. They're not wanting to lead a campaign on this issue, but we've identified it, we've outlined the issues, and I think we've had a good discussion there. Any final points to finish us off, or should we just wait until the next controversy, the next scandal might appear in the next couple of months?
Is that what you got to get us in for, George? Scandalous. Yeah.
We could get you in. Scandals on URY. Hopefully not the scandal will be from URY. That would be a bit of a shame if it was.
I think
overdue one.
It'd be a good place to finish that both newspapers over the past couple of weeks have got completely new editorial teams. Both papers have some very, very good writers, and York Media is strong, there's no doubt about that, and it will continue to be strong, but that's not to say that it's perfect, and it never will be.
Well, Jamie, Chris and Kat, thank you very much for joining that discussion. Thank you. We're going to be doing next is we'll be moving on to the sport. We're going to have a bit of a sport update. You're a sporty person, aren't you, Jamie?
I was.
Yeah, are you now the Constantine College person for sport football?
Yeah.
What's that involve? How can you be in one college and then look after another?
Coach Jamie.
I'm not a member of Constantine College. I'm a member of Vanbrugh College, and I'm proud to be a member of Vanbrugh College.
So are you gonna
calm down?
Make them lose on purpose? So
no. Constantine, because of the way that the football works, every other college has two years of experience to draw upon every year. Constantine didn't have that. So just in the short term, they wanted somebody to help them out. So that's what, there's a group of us, and that's what we're doing. It's only a short term thing.
Conglomerate of coaches, yeah. Is that?
Like the Unilever of coaches.
Hope they get the support they need. Thank you very much again, guys, for coming in. We will leave you to it now. You can enjoy your evening. And we've now got Josh making his way into his very busy studio. We've had a lot of guests today. We've had probably about a good 8 or so people on this edition of York Talks.
Start your own talk show, George.
This is a talk show. This is York Talks.
Televised talk show.
Well, we might have to. Oh, you never know. I could be on YCV someday.
Blimey, George and a sofa and
yeah, it'd be great. It's been fantastic, but I do love York Talks, and we will be continuing with the news hour next Wednesday at 6 p.m. But I think we're going to be bringing in the York Talks every so often, because it's a great thing to have on, having a bit more open discussion rather than just set news stories. Don't you think, Josh?
I know, it mixes up, and it's quite interesting as well, the stories we've had to talk about this week.
Yeah, and you never know, if we have an even more packed show next week or another time, we could talk about international issues, because that's something we have done in our previous pilot shows of Your Talks. And I think if we had a bit more time of a schedule and a bit more advance warning, we might have had a discussion on, of course, the Canadian Parliament shootings that have happened today. But we'll just leave that for the news today. But for now, over to you, Josh, for a bit of a sports update.
Well, it's Wednesday, and which means another round of Bucks fixtures have been played this afternoon. Although results are still being updated, there are still another to talk about. Beginning with football, a mixed day with the men's firsts winning 4-2 against Leeds Beckett thirds, but the women's seconds losing 3-1 against Huddersfield firsts. It was a bad day for the rugby teams, with the women's first losing 65-0 against Manchester firsts, and the men's first and third teams losing heavily also. Finally, badminton, the men's first and thirds both drew against Nottingham, but the women's firsts were beaten 8-0 in Sheffield. That's all for today's Bucks Roundup. To get a full picture of how York's Sport Union got on this week, you can hear a complete roundup of results on Friday's Sports Hour. Also on the Sports Hour this week, we find out more about the performance sports programme at York. American football is our sport of the week. We try out a step and tone class, plus loads of discussion as always. We talk about Jove Pavey's chances of making Rio 2016 and the scandal involving the Williams sisters. That's all on the Sports Hour this week at 6.
Well, sounds good. We've got about 6 minutes or so left in our show. So what I'm going to do, we're going to come back to a story that we talked about earlier. And that was York Uni Swap Shop. We heard from your wife, Claire Thomas, all about the amazing things you can possibly buy. And Kat, have you come across your York Uni Swap Shop at all? And what do you think? Is it any good? It's meant to be like an open marketplace. You're meant to be able to swap things. But I tend to notice you get very extortionately priced things, or you get absolute tat going for basically nothing.
No, I agree. I've never bought anything off it. But I can definitely see the advantages. I mean, textbooks are being continually swapped, which I think is a great idea because you know how expensive that a lot of textbooks can be. But yeah, a lot of it is just a bit rubbish, isn't it? I've seen like mannequin heads and things like that, which, you know, are a bit frightening, in all honesty.
Now, I've never sold anything myself on it, but I know my housemates have set like drawers and stuff and little items of furniture, and sometimes you can get a good deal, both receiving and giving, in a sense that you can get a good value from a sale of something, but equally you can buy something and actually get it for cheaper, and you might not be getting it for a good value, but you think it's a good value. Whereas when you go to Argos, there's no such thing as bartering when you go to Argos or buy it on Amazon. Do you think having that element of sort of you can name a price, Peter, is that gonna help?
Well, I bought something on Swapshop last week, actually. I bought a book, a textbook for my Spanish class. And well, in terms of pricing, the seller wanted £20. When I messaged her offering around 15, she said, OK, no, that's right. I don't think anyone was really going to pay £20. Thought I'd just put it out there.
Cheeky.
So, but yes, you've got that level of bartering. What I was impressed with the swap shop was the administrators on the Facebook page. Mm. As soon as I advertised that I wanted this book, they linked me straight to someone that sold it, that was advertising it further down the page, you know, that I hadn't seen. So, from my opinion, it's well managed, at least.
Now, that's one thing I'm probably really poor at, because I sold an LFA Level 2 textbook, and I basically just commented on someone's post who said they wanted it, and I was like, I've got one, it's sat on my shelf, it's doing absolutely nothing, it's no value to me, name a price. And they actually said £15, and I was like, that's too much. Like, I ended up giving it to them for a fiver. I'm not sure if that's just a really bad sort of Del Boy inside me, I don't know, but...
One day, George, you'll be a millionaire.
It's just I didn't want to overprice. It was no use for me, so I would have much preferred. It's like a bit like Free Cycle. I was treating it like that. Like, you can give me £5 to kind of buy me a drink or whatever, but yeah, I'm not going to charge you just a pound below what it's worth, just for the sake of it. Now, okay, it's coming up to 18:56 and 48 seconds. It's coming to the end of the show, which is quite a shame. It's been a very successful show today. I'm really glad that everyone's been tuning in. We've had some lovely messages through, and you can continue the debate online. Just go to our Facebook page, that's URY News, or you could go to URY Sports and get yourself ready for the Sports Hour, which is on Friday. But what I'm going to do now is play some very exciting music and get ourselves ready for the end of the show.
York Talks with George Lane.
It is that time. We've got Kat, she's getting ready with her headphones on.
I'm so ready.
Are you ready for the news?
I'm so ready.
Well, I think we might go to the news slightly early today, because rather than me talk for 3 minutes about something, I think we'll go straight to the news. Because you know what I accidentally did today, listeners? I accidentally missed out a whole section. So we actually were running 7 minutes short, and we managed to make back 4 minutes of time. But I accidentally did that. But never mind. What we will do now is we'll go to the news a couple of minutes early. It's not quite 7 o'clock, so don't panic yourself if you're at home and you're thinking, what is this news? It's actually just Kat.
Live from the URY newsroom at 6:58. Several shots have been fired inside and outside Canada's Parliament in Ottawa, leaving one soldier dead. A gunman fired at the National War Memorial and then ran into Parliament nearby, continuing the attack. The incident came hours after Canada raised its terror threat level following a fatal hit-and-run attack on two soldiers earlier in the week. Former BBC Radio 1 DJ Mike Reed has requested that a song he wrote in support of UKIP be withdrawn from sale following complaints that it was racist. UKIP Calypso, performed with a mock Caribbean accent, sings the praises of party leader Nigel Farage. I'm so sorry that the song unintentionally caused offence. It was never meant to, and I apologise unreservedly, Reed said. I've told the company to withdraw the single immediately. Pop group S Club 7 are to reunite for the first time in more than a decade for Children in Need next month. The group recorded the charity's official single in 2000, Never Had a Dream Come True, which reached number one. The group is set to perform a medley of their greatest hits on the BBC Appeal Show on the 14th of November. In sports news, the BBC Sports Personality of the Year 2014 panel has been announced. Olympians Rebecca Adlington and Denise Lewis will join Paralympic star Tanny Gray Thompson and former footballer Jason Roberts on the BBC Sports Personality of the Year panel for this year. The panel, which will consist of 12 people in total, will decide the top 10 contenders for the main award, as well as the Team of the Year, Coach of the Year, and Overseas Sports Personality. Now a quick look at the weather. This evening and tonight will be a mild night with spells of rain becoming lighter and more intermittent into the early hours as winds also ease a little. Most of the rain will be on western slopes of Pennines and the North Yorkshire Moors with highs of 11 degrees. That's the latest from me. This has been York Talks.
It's coming up to 7 o'clock now. Next up is UOIPM, the Harry Whittaker Show. But now, here's Starlight by Muse.